Oh my god, I fixed it. Yeah, it's episode 12.
Okay. Alright, well, in that case, hello and welcome to Card Knock Life, episode 12. I'm your host, Corey Murphy, here with Daryl Feltner.
Heyo!
And no one else today. We're going to fly a duo.
Yeah, dead air.
Dead air, yep. We're going to just leave the amount of space that John would be talking totally blank, and then you can imagine what he would say about his experience at SCG Chicago last weekend.
Yeah, he did pretty well with Burn going into the... He's X1 for a while, and then just kind of fell off at the end, so I heard. Yeah, a lot of my ascendings actually did pretty well. Sam Bruning almost top 8 on break. He missed it. He was 9th on breakers playing Abzan in the main event. And then there were quite a few good showings from some of the Madisonians in the Modern and Legacy, respectively. Our own co-host Brandon Simarow, 10th with lands in the Legacy 5K, so...
Oh yeah,
not bad showings all around.
I don't know if you saw that Ryan was up there too on Modern. I put his decklist in the show notes, and I was like, "Oh hey, there's Ryan."
Yeah, so hey, that's Ryan. Yeah,
but, 15th in the Modern 5K. And
yeah,
so we'll talk a little about his deck later.
Yeah, a lot of good showings all around.
Yeah, I know before the event happened, Brandon was like, "Hey man, you want to get on Cockatrice and test a little bit?" Because he's like, he hasn't played Standard for the longest time, and so he was playing like a Goblin deck. And we played like 3 rounds of it, and we were both like, oh man, this is gonna hurt, Brandon. And, cause he just kept getting blown out by like sweepers and stuff, which is the problem with goblins right now.
Yeah, Languish, Anger, just.
And so I pulled out like an Abzan control deck, cause I was like, this is probably what you're gonna see a lot of, right? I think this is the best deck right now. And so we played that, and he was like, I wanna play that, but I just don't have the cards for it. I think he ended up playing it anyway. I don't know how he pulled it together.
Spare deck, dude.
Oh, did he do spare deck?
I don't know if he did, but hopefully he did. Because
I don't think so. He didn't have enough time to get it.
Yeah, but I think, Abzan Control, I think, is where I'm going to be leaning for when I go to the Invitational. Because the deck, just like Thoughtseize, is so powerful.
Yeah.
And, like, I think the 3 most powerful cards in Standard right now are Ugin, Thoughtseize, and Dent Protector. And that deck has them all.
Yep.
Why not play the best cards?
I should say he was on mid-range, actually, but...
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He was on Abzan. Either way, mid-range is an expensive deck to pull together. I'm sure you had to borrow it from someone, but we'll have to ask him next week when he's here.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, I tried testing that deck with, like, Crux of Fate instead of Languish, and I thought it was actually really strong. Just had a lot of answers that just worked.
So, Languish's existence... So, this is actually not something I put in the show notes, but it's kind of an interesting control thought process here that... cards have on the meta. Languish's pure existence caused people to test decks that couldn't beat Languish, like, you know, Goblins or like a bunch of X4s. And so deck like Abzan Aggro can't beat Languish because Death Dealer has to pump twice, and Fleeceman Lion, even when you monster it, still dies to Languish unless you put counters on it from Dromoka's Command.
Uh-huh.
So like decks like that get stifled by the existence of Languish. And so when people start to shy away from those decks, you can not play a Languish and play something like Crux of Fate and get away with it because people are shying away from the decks that would lose to Languish, expecting Languish to be played since it just got printed. So it's a really interesting, like, dichotomy.
Yeah, yeah. And, just, I mean, I guess just generally in the mirror match when you're playing against Tassies and Rhinos.
In Rhinos.
Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. People started cutting their Coursers even. Like, there were quite a few decks playing no Courser.
Oh, yeah.
Just, like... Can't play it. I'm playing Language.
Cool.
Or people will play that card, so.
Alright, well, we got a lot to talk about. Let's get right into it.
Alright, I got some fun Modern stuff. I'm going to kick it off with sort of, we've let the dust settle on Dragons of Tarkir. Magic Origins has finally come out, had its first tournament. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to take a look at Modern, because, you know, every time a new set comes out, there are cards that you just like stick out like a sore thumb and go, that card is Modern playable. That card is really powerful. Mm-hmm. That card's going to do something to Legacy. And so I kind of wanted to look at, you know, what there were 2 big hits that kind of shifted into Modern, and that's Kolaghan's Command and Collector Company. Mm-hmm. I think those are sort of the 2 rookie all-stars from the new set. And the real question is, you know, which one of these do you think made a bigger impact on Modern? Do you think, you know, Kolaghan's Command because of its flexibility and slotted into a bunch of different decks? Or is it Collected Company because of the fact that Collected Company picked up an old deck archetype, allowed it to come back to life after they banned Birthing Pod? And then it also kind of breathed some life into decks like gave Green White Hate Bears sort of a new angle of attack. It gave Elves this crazy new strategy that they can just turn 3 Collected Company, put 2 Elves into play, untap, and combo off and kill you. So, like, he kind of has put it's sort of that's introduced sort of different angles of attack. So my question is, you know, which one of these all stars really that came out of the what was the newest set do you think made the most impact on modern?
Yeah, this has been in the show notes for a while, so I'm glad we're finally getting to it. But yeah, I think definitely Collected Company made like bigger difference in the metagame. It created three deck archetypes that didn't really exist before. Because I would argue that Green White Hate Bears with Collected Company is a totally different deck than just like the straight up Vile Hate Bears.
The ones that you used to see, even though they play the same creatures, just the threat
generally the same creatures, but a lot of times they're running like Knight of the Reliquaries and stuff in there, and they get more like mid rangey, just like beat down. And they don't do the vile strategy, which was like that was more like the namesake of that Hate Bears deck than anything. And so to cut that, like that to me is a different deck, you know.
I can agree with that. Yeah, I think the Collected Company definitely filling that birthing pod slot is very good. Letting that deck still exist, uh-huh. Like it would exist with Cord no matter what, but like giving it another shot at like being rather consistent. Yeah. You might argue that because of that, it might get banned quickly because people are going to draw all these parallels and let the deck kind of keep on rolling and feel like it didn't miss too much, so it might get banned kind of quick. I kind of actually fall on the other end of the spectrum, Polygon's Command, because it's like this is that super flexible card that modern control decks needed to be able to like push them over the top. And you saw that, you know, Chapin playing Grixis, that slotted its way into Grixis control. It's made its way into Jund. Pretty much anything playing red and black, and some decks will even splash black for it. Splinter Twin started splashing black specifically for this card. Because right. Just all these flexible modes, being a 2-for-1 against Affinity for sure, being, you know, a 2-for-1 against Snapcaster Mage where you can shock their Snapcaster and make them discard, or you can pick up your own Snapcaster and do something else. You know, all that flexibility and that power. You know, coming from a 3-mana spell, which is something kind of rare, you don't see spells being as pushed now as you do the creatures. You know? I could see a spell like Collected Company that doesn't feel pushed, but it kind of associates itself to the powerful creatures that are coming behind it. Whereas something like Kolaghan's Command, I don't expect to see spells this powerful and this flexible come out anymore because, you know, even though it's a very pushed spell, they've sort of said, you know, we want the focus to be on the ground, on the creatures in combat. And, you know, play out on the board. We don't want, you know, the tricks to be as much of a focus anymore.
Right.
And
right.
So that kind of, that stunned me. And so I kind of fall on the opposite end of the spectrum of, you know, I think the flexibility of Kolaghan's Command to slot into so many things is really, even though it hasn't created nothing new, it's definitely left a gigantic footprint on the way modern plays.
Right. We're talking just like quantity. Like there are a lot of Grixis decks that popped up because of it. Right, but they're like, you know, one archetype is a little bit changed, and then, you know, Grixis control didn't really exist before.
No.
Cake Man.
Yeah.
I should add that this like really speaks to the design because of, you know, like when that cycle was printed, I don't think that anyone was like on that one as the best.
So
one, you know,
credit to Kendrick, friend and host on the podcast.
Yeah.
We first saw it printed, and I'm like, that card's okay. I wasn't, like, overwhelmed by it.
Yeah.
But it was mostly because I kind of figured they printed all the commands at the same power level. And so, like, if Kolaghan's Command was the best-looking one and it was eh, then, you know, none of the other ones would be really impressive. And Kendrick's like, no. So it's an instant speed discard spell.
Yeah.
When your opponent's top decking. And you get your Snapcaster back. I'm like, that's probably not that strong. I mean, that's like the best case. That's the best case scenario, and then maybe you flash back. And we played like 5 games, and I played like a Splinter Twin deck against him, and he just was like, "All right, during your draw step, Polygon's Command, you get my Snapcaster Mage. Snapcast is cryptic, counter your Splinter Twin." I'm like, "All right, I'm sold. That card is pretty good." Like, and I just put my hands up. I'm like, I don't know if that card is the reason I can't beat you, but that card's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
So yeah.
If we go back that far, I will admit that I was really high on Silmgar's Command, yeah. And that's seeing no play. But hey, looking at this card, I think that it doesn't take much for it to be like decent or like a 1 or 2 yeah. of. But what would have changed it? You know, like if one of the modes is okay. Target creature is -3/-3. What if it said -4/-4? Would that make a difference?
yeah, it actually would. It'd have to be 4 mana. It'd have to be 4 mana.
You think so?
On tempo, you could trade with Forcer, like, if you're on the play,
yeah.
And they play a Forcer on turn 3, you could untap, play a land, and kill their Forcer on turn 4.
Okay.
So, well, I mean...
Do you think it would be overpowered if it was -4/-4 on that?
No. No, it would have to touch dismember range and be -5/-5.
Okay, see, I don't think and that either. I don't see why it's not. It is choose two.
Yeah, it is choose two. The flexibility, I think, is what they did there. But some honorable mentions to, you know, cards that popped up a little bit, didn't really create their own archetype, but were seen, you know, that were cute or neat or people kind of had hype on that did get played, you know, Ojutai, Anticipate, Anafenza, the Kintree Spirit sort of falling into that birthing pod deck itself. Mm-hmm. Atarkus Command. You know, different cards like that that got to kind of see their rise a little bit and then kind of settle down and as like a nice niche role player. So it's kind of cool just to assess, you know, after the dust has settled, where did we come from? What did we get out of this?
Right. Yeah, definitely a good third set. A lot of impact in Eternal.
Yeah.
Atarkus Command has plenty of play in
Modern. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, everyone's sort of... And it's one of those niche cards. You only see it in one or two decks. It didn't, like, cause things to go crazy, and all of a sudden your archetypes were born. So, yeah, it does hit the honorable mention. But those were the two kind of cards that I wanted to see what end of the spectrum you were on. I kind of knew where I fell, which was, like, both are really powerful. I prefer Golgari's Command just because of the flexibility in all sorts of different decks it creates. Because I prefer the flexibility over the pure power of just, like, making something or nothing. That's just a personal thing.
All right, cool.
But we're going to get
back.
Still talking about Mod. We're going to get to talk about your favorite card.
All right.
I know you're a huge fan of Serum Visions.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And the cost of Serum Visions, the fact that it's only been printed once, you know. But you're going to get your FNF promos. So, I mean...
I'm going to try.
Good luck. I had some, like, extra credit floating around.
Yeah,
and I was like, you know, I'm going to play Modern. I want to play Splinter Twin at some point. And I might play Grixis Control, so I guess I have to pick up these Serum Visions.
Oh, Daryl, you started with that?
What?
You got the Serum Visions first?
I picked them up.
Okay.
Right. Like, they were in an order with a bunch of stuff. I was like, I need another Snapcaster. You know, I'm going to eventually... I was just picking up Modern cards that I would use.
Okay.
And Serum Vision fell into the card.
All right, fine.
I bought 4 Serum Visions, and they cost me $55.
God.
From Moxmania. Moxmania has pretty good prices. Yep. Usually TCG mid, a little under sometimes, a little over sometimes. Just depends on what you're buying. But, you know, 4 Serum Visions, $55.
That's high.
That was a lot of dollars. Yeah, so they showed up at my door, and I opened the package, and I saw them, and I'm like, man, this card's really bad. I just read it, and I'm like, why did I buy this card? And I thought, you know, because it's just the best cantrip in Modern, so I bought it. But then I sat and thought about it. I was like, I bought some other cards for, like, Blue-White Tron. I bought, like, an Iona, an Emrakul, an Ugin, you know. And I looked at my order, and I was like, you know, I could have bought another Iona instead of one of these Serum Visions.
Oh, Iona's tanking, man. That was just spoiled today.
Iona, $14, $13.75. One Serum Visions I bought, $13.50. If you had told me 4 months ago that I could have bought Iona at the same price I could have bought one Serum Visions, I would have called you a madman.
Yeah.
I just... And so, like, the buyer experience of, I have to get Serum Visions so that I can play it in my Splinter Twin deck, or so that I can play it in my, like, control deck that I want to have a little consistency. It just... It's awful. Well, just...
And you know, I was really upset about it when it was not reprinted, but it has gone down a bit, and I've been like, I check almost every other day to see like what the price is on Puka, because Puka's got a good grasp on that for the most part, but they lag behind a little bit. But also on TCG, and you can get them for like $8 now too.
Okay, that's really good.
So
Yeah, I just had the feeling of like, I bought this card. And, like, it was basically, like, free money because, like, I had credit that I wasn't using.
Mm-hmm.
And even, like, buying it with free money felt really bad. Like, I was just like, that, like, Brainstorm, infinitely more powerful, printed a little more, and used as at the same caliber or even a higher caliber in a format, $2.
Right.
Well, $13.
Here's the question, Daryl. You've probably got like 25 sleight of hands floating around in your collection, right? Is it that significant where if you're going to go to FNM, are you going to be upset if you're playing 4 sleight of hand over 4 Serum Vision in a twin deck?
I actually have no sleight of hands.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
No, no sleight of hands.
I got plenty of those.
Am I so upset that if I were to play Twin, I'd have to play sleight of hand? I mean, there's a small power difference in between sleight of hand.
It's pretty slight, isn't it?
Okay, the pawn. It's bad. But, like, seeing the third card is kind of nice. But, like, being able to see two cards immediately. So there's, like, that small flexibility difference.
Right.
I wouldn't be enthused about it. I wouldn't be disappointed.
Okay.
So it's, like, it's six and one half dozen the other. Just now, as long as I have to play that crappy ninth edition art and I get to play a blackboard one, fine.
Yeah. Well, the ninth edition art is really sweet, though. If you look at it, he's, like, doing a magic trick and he's making a little top disappear.
Yeah,
but you can get the portal ones.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, that's my I got to experience. You know, I need Serum Visions. I'm going to acquire this card.
Yeah,
and acquiring it with free money felt bad. So I can't imagine just like how horrible people that actually have to pay or trade cards for this card actually feel.
Well, like Daryl, you also mentioned Iona. You can get that one for $10 now too because of the Modern Masters 2/1. The MM2 cards are. Like in some cases, like half the price of the original printings.
Yeah, I know.
The same art, and it's nuts. Why would you ever care that much? Like
you don't want the big goofy silver dot at the bottom.
I kind of like the new border. You know,
I'm not opposed. I'm not a fan.
But also check this out. I'm gonna put this in the chat. I'll also put it in our notes.
All right.
They just spoiled this today. Have you seen that?
This is
the new Iona. They showed the FTV Angels. And so Iona is one of those ones. And that art is awesome.
Why is this foil?
Because it's sweet.
I hate that it's foil. Why? I love that art, but I won't play with it because it's foil.
Because it's going to curve?
Well, no, I just hate foils, and I can't read them.
Oh.
And I want to be able to read my cards.
You know, I think they changed their process a little bit, the way that they printed those, because they recognized that the humidity like really... like. Messes with the foils and really makes them curl.
Yeah.
And so I feel like they have a new way of doing the foiling process. Is that true?
I don't know. But that art... Oh, man, that art's awesome.
It is awesome. She's got, like, books flying everywhere. What is that?
I don't know. But that art, I can get behind that.
Yeah. It's definitely cooler than the original.
Yeah. But no, so that's my story on acquiring Serum Visions. It felt bad buying it with... free money, essentially. I cannot imagine actually acquiring this card.
So now my advice to anyone in the same boat as you is I would not start with Serum Visions. I would get every other like staple card.
I had all the cards.
Oh, for, you like, did? Twin. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Like I had four twins. I had to get two more X-Arcs. Like literally I had the deck except for Sleight of Hand or Serum Visions.
Okay. Because despite all my complaining just, like, about it being reprinted, it's going to happen. It's going to happen sooner or later. If it doesn't, it's going to get banned, you know? And I don't see that happening.
No. Yeah, so, like, I had to finish the deck with Serum Visions, and it felt bad. Onward and Upward. Enough feel bad.
First. All right, yeah.
there was a standard tournament this past weekend, and it was okay. I wasn't a huge fan of it, just because, like, you saw, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Mm-hmm.
Three green-red devotion decks.
I know.
Four new cards total, and the three of them in the top eight. Like, just...
Yeah,
I'm not saying I don't
think
things
change slow. People are with the tried and true.
I'm not saying I don't like green-red devotion. It's a bad deck. It just... I expected more creativity out of week one. Now, don't get me wrong. We got some pretty creative decks, one of which I'm going to talk about here. Mm-hmm. But... you know, I expected a lot more creativity to see out of week one top eighting decks. The one of the decks that did top eight, though, that caught my eye, I heard you like Thopters.
Yeah, I know where you're going with this. This is true.
Are you a big fan of the Thopters? Because if so, Jeff Hoogland has a deck for you. So, Jeff Hoogland got seventh place, top eight of this tournament. He decided to sleeve up a blue-white control deck. Now, on week one, I would be pretty opposed to this, as much as I love control. Because it's really hard to point a control deck in a format that you know nothing about. You can guess. You can say, okay, Abzan will still be a thing. And, you know, Mono Red Goblins is a thing. Who knows what else I'm pointing at? No clue. So I feel really bad about playing a control deck week one. But this one, this deck was pretty spicy. Four Hangar Back Walkers. For those of you that don't remember that card from the pre-release, it's XX for a 0/0 artifact construct. Comes to play with X 1/1 counters. So you pay 2 mana, it comes to play as a 1/1. You pay 4 mana, it comes to play as a 2/2, etc., etc. When it dies, put 1/1 colorless stoppers into play equal to the number of counters on Hangar Back Walker. So if it's a 4/4 when it dies, 4/1 stoppers. Pretty straightforward. Pay 1, tap it, put a counter on Hangar Back Walker. So it can grow over the course of the game and make stoppers that can harass your opponent's planeswalkers or just kill your opponent. Continuing down the list, 3 Elspeth and Ugin, 3 Darksteel Citadel, like 27 lands. Mostly to be noted, 3 Darksteel Citadels and 1 Radiant Fountain, which I'm going to make fun of here in a minute when I get to this deck list. 2 Thopter Spy Network, which is the big kind of new card that helped the deck together. The beginning upkeep, if you have an artifact, make a 1/1 colorless Thopter with flying. Whenever one or more artifact creatures you control deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. So, if you combine Thopter Spy Network with Darksteel Citadel, you basically have Bitter Blossom.
Yep.
You get a 1/1 every upkeep. When one or more of your 1/1s deals damage, you get to draw a card. So it's not like Biden Athasa where attack you with 5 Thopters, they all hit you, draw 5 cards. It doesn't work like that. It's just, I hit you with 1 guy, draw a card. I hit you with 5 guys, draw a card. Doesn't matter. Artificer's Epiphany, which is the 3 mana instant speed divination. If you don't control an artifact, discard a card. 3 Clash of Wills, the X and blue counter spell, pay X or it's countered. 4 Dig, a Disdainful Strokes, 4 Dissolves, a Last Breath, 2 Valorous Dance, 3 End Hostilities, and 2 Swift Reckoning, which is the spell mastery, destroy target tap creature, sorcery, 2 mana sorcery. Then just 15 sideboard cards, nothing new, nothing of note really. Displacement Wave was kind of the odd standout card that was in a sideboard. Return all non-land permanents with converted mana cost extra less in their owner's hands. It's basically for the Goblins matchup. You pay 2 mana and bounce all the tokens.
Or the you can hit opposing Elspeth tokens.
Yeah, opposing Elspeth tokens as well. But Hangar Back Walker and Thopter Spy Network did a lot of work in Jeff's deck. Like, but the thing that kind of like threw me was, how do you justify playing the first Radiant Fountain over the fourth Darksteel Citadel when you have 2 cards that say, if you have an artifact, put a die in play?
I know. I don't get where he's going with that, but apparently, like, this guy's a mastermind
Jeff's a very good deck builder. So
that 2 life mattered.
Yeah, he tested it into the ground. I don't doubt that Jeff, like, knew that the 2 life mattered, but, like, it's really hard for me to wrap my little head around.
I mean, he's got a lot of scry, so it's like he can dig for that life if that's what he needs to do. If he needs to not like tap out for a card and just get, you know, 2 more life out of it.
Sure, and I guess it ends up turning out that, you know, Hangar Back Walker gets into play and you can play a Thopter Spy Network, and because you have Hangar Back Walker, you make a Thopter, and if they kill your Hangar Back Walker, it makes Thopters, so you make a Thopter.
Right.
So I mean, You have to be put in a very difficult situation such that you don't have a Thopter or a Darksteel Citadel, which was the master, which is just the brilliance behind this deck. Thopter Spy Network was just aces in this deck, and I'm a huge fan of it. If I wasn't so bent on playing Azan Control, because I thought those were the best cards in Standard, and I knew nothing about Standard, I would probably be playing this deck, because this deck looks right up my alley.
It's cheap, but, too.
Once you own the Ugin and the Elspeth and the Flooded Strands, pretty cheap.
Well, Elspeth's like $5. There was a reprint in the Clash Pack or the event deck or whatever. Yeah.
Oh my, Elspeth was like infinite dollars a while ago.
Yeah, it was like $25, but you can get it for $5 now.
Oh, yeah, cool.
$6. So, digs are like $5. You know, after they got banned. So.
Yeah, Flooded Strand really. Flooded Strand and the Ugin.
But Hangar Back Walker, I'll tell you right now, that's an $8-$9 card in 2 weeks.
You can check that statement. It's a $9 card right now.
Oh, is it? Because yesterday it was $5.
Today it is $9 on Star City, so it'll probably be $5 somewhere else. But $9 on Star City for Hangar Back Walker.
Yeah, it's going up. I was trying to get them for $4 on Puka, and no one would send them to me. And now, yeah, now I'm looking, even TCG is all $7, at, or almost $8. Oh my god.
Yeah, Hairback Walker, kids.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It really is that good. I tested this deck out a couple times just to see what it was all about, and that is insane. If you can stick that, like, in a control matchup, like, that's enough to go on, because there's not a lot of, like, exile that's going to actually deal with that thing in a way that,
like, yeah, doesn't like cause major problems. They can last breath it, but they have to last breath it before turn four, right. Or you have a 3-3, and so you just leave it a 3-3, so you make it a 4-4, it dies to Valorous Stance, and you don't get the tokens.
Well, they're not even... No one's playing Last Breath, anyway. This deck's got one main deck.
And it's got three in the sideboard.
Okay. But this deck is not a format staple right now, so...
I agree. I'm just thinking of, like, the removal spells in Standard, you know? And yeah. There's Last Breath that exiles, there's Valorous Stance that exiles. So, you know, Valor, like, you get the three power and leave it there, and you get right between those two removal spells.
Yeah. You know what I really like in this one is Faded Retribution.
That card would have won him a game had it not got Thoughtseize the turn before he cast it.
Oh, really? Oh, shit.
Yeah, he had to dig through time to find it, and he actually found it. And his opponent had, like, two Dead Protectors, an Elspeth with, like, 9 tokens, but hadn't ultimated because he was harassing it with Doctor's Mind Network, uh-huh. And a Siege Rider. And, like... His opponent had attacked, and he had, like, dealt with the board and didn't die, and, like, flipped over another Den Protector and Thoughtseized him. and he was, like, exactly on mana to do that. And if he hadn't had exact mana, Jeff would have untapped, passed turn to him, and he would have made 3 Elspeth tokens and then got Faded Retribution right out of the game. Like, it would have been over. Because Jeff would have still had a Thopter Spy Network with a Darksteel Citadel versus an empty board.
Right.
Yeah, it just would have been insane. So, yeah, that card is very good.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and the obligatory 2 Stratus Dancer, I like that in there. That's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's just a well, a blue. Really well-built deck. This is kind of the big one of the weekend for me, just to see somebody actually do something different. Everything else is kind of, the more things change, the more they stay the same. A lot of misses, but like Borderland Ranger with upside, not surprised anyone played that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that card is a little overhyped at this point, but I don't see it, like, value-wise going down anywhere.
If you've played Borderland Ranger, you know the Borderland Ranger is acceptable. It was much better at fixing your mana.
No problem. It's good. I mean,
and so, like, Borderland Ranger that flips over into a card advantage engine, pretty good. So.
It's just a little underwhelming in some situations. You don't want that. You don't want a basic forest. That's the problem.
Yeah, you want a not forest. You want anything else? So another couple more fun ones, and then I'll kick it over your way.
That's cool. Do your thing.
All right, I'm gonna go to MTGO.
Okay.
So I don't know if you play. I don't think you don't play MTGO.
No, oh, it'll Mac.
Oh yeah, get wrecked.
Yeah.
But MTGO, it does exist. It's Wizards' sanctioned way to play Magic Online. For those of you that don't know, I assume the people who listen to the podcast know. They tried to make a change to events to stabilize the economy. And it's an interesting change. I support them trying to do something, but I just, this can't be it. To kind of summarize the change, they introduced play points, which originally event tickets, which basically were literally a dollar, like one event ticket you could buy for a dollar. Mm-hmm. You used event tickets to join events. Events paid out in packs. You could give your packs to bots or other players for event tickets. So you could keep playing Magic. You just keep doing that cycle until you ran out of tickets, and then you'd have to figure out a way to get more tickets. They created play points, which are essentially points that get you into events. So a 6-ticket event costs you 60 play points. So basically play points are worth a dime if you look at them that way. But they exist now. That's all. But in giving us the system, they're giving out less booster packs. So they're giving you play points to let you get into events. And the booster packs, like a lower number of booster packs to help you get more cards, which you can still get rid of for tickets, and tickets can still get you into events. So they're kind of giving you a dual way to do things.
Okay, so tickets are no longer, they're not being phased out, are they?
No, tickets aren't being phased out at all. Tickets are still, like, the economy, like, if you want to enter an event, you can give them, give up event tickets to enter the event.
Uh-huh.
Or if you, like, do well in events, you get play points. And instead of giving up your, like, it's like getting store credit at Mox. If you win an event, you can get store credit and enter with that credit instead of actual dollars.
Yeah, okay.
So event tickets are actually worth dollars, and play points are non-tradable, and they're yours, and you can get into events with them.
Okay, got it.
And so, because what happened is recently, packs of Magic cards, if you tried to buy them out of, like, the store, they were, like, $3.99, you know, or whatever, $3, something like that. Whatever MSRP for a pack is. Well, if you tried to sell them to a bot, after you won them from an event, they were only going for like 2.25 because all the events paid out the same packs. So it flooded the market with packs.
Mm-hmm.
And so the pack price plummeted, and you couldn't sustain yourself playing Magic to just keep playing Magic, let alone try and build a collection or try and like make enough tickets to sell for money, which some people do. You know, they're not supposed to, but they do.
Right.
Call it like you see it. So this is like their attempt to leverage reducing the amount of packs, which increases the value of the pack and lets people continue to try and play. Well, the one problem is they kind of showed how their cut is taken out of 2-man queues and 8-man queues and things like that, showing that, you know, they're giving out 35 play points when they take in 40. So they're getting a 12.5%. You know, they're showing that they're taking a cut out of virtual points for no reason.
Right, yeah, there is no reason. You know,
yeah. And so the biggest problem that you're going to see, though, is daily events, which are what people used to make money off of. You give them 6 tickets. If you went 4-0, you would get 11 packs, which, you know, at the time you could sell for 33 tickets, and, you know, you'd get a 5-to-1 return when packs were $3. Well, packs plummeted, so now it's like $18, you know, or $22 for your tickets. You still get a 3-to-1 return. But now they're doubling the price of entry fees into those events, and they're not doubling the payouts. And so in their attempt to stabilize the economy of packs and event tickets, they're sneaking in doubling the price of daily events, and not doubling the prize payout. So they're getting a higher cut. And so I think it's going to hurt Magic Online in the long term to have doubled the price of your events without giving the players a similarly structured benefit.
Uh-huh.
But I do like the concept of trying to stabilize the price of packs. So, you know, you're getting a good and a bad. The bad, I think, much outweighs the good here.
Right.
And, you know,
they're constantly making the wrong changes to MTGO, I feel. And the reason they can do that is because people will use it no matter how crappy the user experience is.
Yeah.
You know, like, you look at the interface, and, like, you just need to take one glance at that thing to be like, so, well, this is a barely functioning piece of software.
So I like the interface, actually.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. Once you learn how to use the interface, it takes a little bit of learning.
Oh, yeah, it takes a lot of learning.
Not really. Like, no? It takes a little bit of learning. No.
Okay, all right. Well,
like, I could probably teach someone to Modo in 10 minutes.
All right, well, I gave it 30, and then I was just totally done with it for the rest of my life, because I sat there, I was thinking, like, okay, so I want to start, I'm gonna like, invest in a cheap a modern deck, right?
Sure.
And so I couldn't even figure out how to piece the pieces together for that.
How to get the cards, okay.
Right.
That's the part that takes something.
It's, like, in the way that it's done, it's just such a mess, man. The marketplace with the bots and everything is just awful. It really is.
Once you get some amount of skill with it, or like watch someone do it, uh-huh, it's actually pretty easy to operate. But okay, so the interface is actually pretty operable. It's just like with all these changes, they like show you a good that they could do, and then they're like, "You want a cupcake? Well, no, have a bag of Brussels sprouts." They give you something really crappy to go along with it. And so this is just another sort of example of, you know, we're gonna fix pack prices. Sweet, everyone wants that. But we're gonna screw you at the same time. Crap, why? Why do you do this? If they just would have left daily event prices and fixed the price payouts on packs, everyone would have been like, Wizards, you're geniuses, and we're gonna play more Modo.
Right. When the, you know, when that software first came out, I was thinking to myself, like, why would you ever want to invest your real hard-earned dollars into something that is a fake version of something that exists in real life? But as I, you know, as I get older and it's harder to, like, make it to those events that you want to do, like, to play competitively online, like, you know, there's something to be said for that, and I think it is worth a certain investment just for the ease of access and the ability to just pick it up whenever you want.
But, or also being able to just, like, play a tournament without, you know, I took a shower. Now I'm going to go play Magic. So I don't have to get dressed and leave. I can just shower and play Magic.
Yes. 10 years later, though, Daryl, having tried to approach it on multiple occasions, it just does not want me to be a part of its system. It does not want my money. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I don't expect that. Like, a lot of people are selling their collections or they're just like not going to ever play Moto. And I'm like, and I respect that. It's just like, it's just interesting how they're trying. Like, I support their attempt to try and fix it, but they're not approaching it. But I figured that, you know, for our listeners that do play Moto, if you haven't seen that, you know, something to think about.
Oh, I'm not shooting it down, Daryl. I'm just going off on a different subject here because I would very much like to be a part of that. And I, like I said, I've tried many times. It's just, it's not working. I have a Mac. So, like, to jump, the hoops that you jump through already involve, you know, getting a parallel or a dual boot or whatever for, you know, for Windows. And so, I don't know. It's just tough. But it just seems to me like it's something that can be fixed if time and money is invested in it, right? And then it can be a very worthwhile investment to them. But it's one of those things that the demand is already in place regardless of how poor the product is.
The software is. Yeah. So, like, some people are starting to move to Hearthstone and other things, but, like...
Oh, it's not the same, though.
Yeah, there won't be a mass enough exodus to get them to change. All right, back to decks. Enough trying to be an economist and explain Moto to people who don't know or don't care. All right, I'll stop. All
right.
Back to decks. Legacy time.
Okay.
Quick stop in Legacy Town. Right, Day's Undoing. So did you think you would see Time Twister played in Legacy? Because I did. Even though it has a really crappy line of text on it, the card's pretty powerful. And so we have a gentleman, Scott Muir, and I've just butchered his name and I don't care. Top 8 in the Chicago 5K with Affinity featuring Day's Undoing.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's pretty much all your fun Affinity stuff, you know, plus some Legacy cards. Disciple of the Vault played in Legacy because you have artifact lands and you can sacrifice them to your Archmon or Avenger and do crazy stuff. Tezzeret, Agent of Bolas. Ancient Tomb, one of your Legacy cards. Chalice of the Void, because playing it for one just crushes some decks.
Yeah, this is nuts.
Ensnaring Bridge, Tormod's Crypt, Cannonist, Revoker, Containment Priest, Whipflare, Thoughtseize, Rook, Cannon Sideboard. But it's just, so, to think your way through this one, you go Ancient Tomb, Chalice 1. So you, like, put a big dent. If you do that, you put a big dent into most Legacy decks. Because Chalice of the Void on 1 turns off a lot of spells like. And then they play a land and they pass because they can't play their 1 drop. And you go, you know, Artifact Blue, Landseed of Synod, Memnite, Frogmite, Day's Undoing. You just shuffled away their reasonable hand. Might have left them with a handful of 1 drops and no lands. And you just gassed back up. And then you're like, okay, go. I have a 2-2 and a 1-1. Go. And then you can untap and play a Cranial Plane and equip it and play a Disciple of the Ball and be like, all right, if you kill my guys, you're going to take damage and attack you for like 7. And just keep on trucking through them. It's just like, it's a very, very well-built deck. I think it's one of the best ways you're going to see someone put Day's Undoing rubber to the road here. Now, I know you don't know a ton about Legacy, but you can kind of see, like, the concessions, main board Chalice of the Void, you know, Ensnaring Bridge to try and beat things like Emrakul off of Show and Tell and Crystal Brand, different things like that. And so I just think this is a really well-built deck. And the one Inkwoth Nexus looks really weird to me, just because it's just there's one of them. It's the only thing you're going to do infect damage with. I'd rather play a Blinkwoth Nexus to kind of go with the flow. But it's a 2-turn kill with Tezzeret because you activate it. Tezzeret, make it a 5-5, attack him for 5. And then activate it again, make it a 5-5, attack him for 5. So, I mean, you get a 2-turn kill with Tezzeret and Inkwoth Nexus. But it's just a really well-built deck, and I'm a huge fan of it. I kind of wanted to bring it to light that someone's doing something with Day's Undoing.
And Affinity doesn't usually show up in Legacy, correct?
So it's a deck, and it's a deck because the artifact lands make it more powerful.
Okay.
But it's pretty soft to the combo decks, because you have to race, and sometimes combo can just outrace you if you don't draw the, like, you know, Memnite, artifact land, Spring Leaf Drum, Mox Opal, Cranial Blade hand, to where you can just put on a plating and hit for like 9 the next turn. You know, you don't draw these really hyper fast hands. You'll be a sitting duck to things like Storm or Show and Tell. The Show and Tell is like, all right, here's Emrakul, go, and you're like, all right, can't beat a 15-15. So that's why, you know, you'll see things like Insanity Bridge on the board, but yeah, so it's. If you can get the right lock piece into play, like, hey, you can play Chalice of Void early, or you can have a really fast start against the slower decks, and you'll just beat some people into the ground. Like, just how it works. But, yeah, I just like the way, very well built, the artifact lands tie this deck together, Disciple of the Vault being able to, you know, team up with Arcbound Ravager to pile counters onto something and drain them so you get double hits out of your Arcbound Ravager counters is really nice. So, just a very well-done package here, I think. And I wanted to kind of bring that to people's attention.
Yeah, and also notable in this top 8 is Merfolk. What is that?
I didn't look at the Merfolk deck, because it's not Merfolk.
It does not have Harbinger of the
Tides. Harbinger of the Tides? All right.
Two on the side,
yeah, because it's pretty good against Tarmogoyf. Lord. I just wanted to ask about that. I didn't look at the Merfolk deck, because I was like, oh, it's Merfolk. I don't... It's like, there's like 15 Lords and... 4 Silver Gold Depths, 4 Crypt Catchers, some True Nanosis, and some images, and that's the deck. We did it, alright. We don't need to look anymore, so. But I did want to bring that Affinity deck, because that's something pretty different to the forefront. And we got two more. Okay. One for Standard, and one for Modern. Where do you want to go first?
Let's go to Modern.
I see some Blood Moons on the horizon here in Modern. Yeah. We have, you know, Tron, we have Bloom, we have Grixis Twin with like 4 basic lands. You know, we have all these decks, and they all have one thing in common when they're not named Burn, and that's their mana bases have like 2 basics in them.
Yeah.
And you can punish them by playing mainboard Blood Moon. And I found a deck that tried to do that in the 5K this weekend. He got top 32, so not a terrible showing. But, you know, didn't top 8, so you're not the best showing. But Sean Gallagher playing Blue Moon. We got a Master of Waves. Some Snapcasters, some Vanillion Clicks of Piranos. 10 Islands, 7 Fetch Lands, 2 Steam Vents, 3 Sulfur Falls. 2 Vidalkin Shackles, 3 Mainboard Blood Moons. 3 Spreading Seas, 3 Cryptics of Dispel, some Electrolyzes and Bolts. Leak, Remand, Spell Snare, Roast, and Sand Greens. And then, you know, nothing crazy I've mentioned in the sideboard except for a Singleton Banefire. Out of the pool.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
But this deck is just trying to prey on Jund, trying to prey on Tron, and all these, the Bloom deck, all these decks whose mana bases are like 93 one-offs, and none of them are basics, and they hit like a basic island or something in their deck for some wonky reason to get with Path to Exile, and this guy's just like, oh yeah? Blood Moon, you go. And their opponent just goes, well, alright, dead. And they bring in their Blood Moon hate, and they hope to draw it, and hope he doesn't have counterspell.
Yeah, you're talking about how this hates on Tron, and like it's got the 3 Blood Moons main deck and 3 Spreading Seas main deck, and then he still thinks he needs 2 Soaring Salt in the board.
Yeah, so Control decks, the Tron matchup is awful because eventually they'll just cast Worm Coil Engine. They'll just be like, "Oh, I have 6 Mountains, Worm Coil Engine, go!" And you're just like. If I don't counter that card, I can't beat it.
Yeah, so you counter it.
Right, but if you don't have a counter spell, like if you have like a handful of spell snares,
I guess,
it's just going to resolve. Like,
all right. Or you Vidalkin Shackles it.
Yes, you can play the Vidalkin Shackles game, which is fantastic. That card is underrated in Modern, but I like the deck trying to prey on the format, playing Blood Moon, playing this control strategy, having a little bit against combo, a lot against aggro with Snapcaster Bolt and, you know, and Roast and things like that. I like this deck. I'm a big fan. Didn't have the greatest of great showings, but something to keep in the back of your mind that there are some people crazy enough to sleeve up mainboard Blood Moons and go to town.
Yep.
If you have any more thoughts, feel free to express. Otherwise, I'm going to move to the standard deck.
Yeah, I mean, I think that like that deck just kind of waxes and wanes, right, based on the metagame. But
yeah,
I know a guy in the area that plays a totally foiled out version of it, which is pretty cool. And so that's a lot to invest in something that, like, in a lot of cases is just not a strong competitor.
Yeah,
but it's an easy transition to like a twin or something because it's just, you know, basically just a blue red.
Yep, just so. Pick up some Splinter Twins and some Seaver's Arcs and call it a day if you want to do that. Last one I got for standard. Do you like to play Rally of the Ancestors?
No.
No, you don't like that card?
No.
No? Oh man, I'm a huge fan.
Yes, I do. Sure.
Oh, okay. I'm a huge fan of that card personally. I'm sorry you don't like it. I tried it with Allies in Modern. That was not good. We're just going to pretend I didn't try that because it was bad. But this one looks kind of sweet. And it's 5-color Rally from the Standard Open. I got 34th place.
Yeah, he had a few camera matches.
He did have a few camera matches. It's like this weird combo deck that's just trying to all-in you with Nantutko Husk. And just, like, throw away all its creatures to make gigantic guys that have fear? I think it's fear. Is it fear or intimidate?
It's intimidate.
It should just be fear.
So it is fear.
I mean, technically it's fear.
But it's not, because it's the color of whatever it's targeting.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Nantutko Husk is black, so it's fear.
Okay, right. For that guy.
Yeah. Deathmist Raptor, Damage Protector. The standout cards that most people might not know, Grim Harspex. It's the 3/2 for 3, hit morph, unmorphs for 1. When a non-token creature you control dies, draw a card. Magosi's Marauder, Nantutko Husk, which is the new sacrifice creature, gets +2/+2 zombie.
Reprint.
It's a reprint, but it's new. Some standard players haven't seen it before. Just to throw it out there. The big winner, 4 Jace Viren's Prodigy. And I know you had some things to say about this card, so I'm going to go through the deck list, and then I'll kick it over to you, and then we can talk about the deck in general after you talk about Jace. One of the new Liliana's, Heretical Healer, you know, 20 lands of various varieties, because there's, you know, 4 Sator Wayfinder, 3 Sylvan Carry added to make the mana go, 2 Court of Calling, 4 Rally of the Ancestors, 4 Gather the Pack, which is the new reveal the top 5 cards, pick a creature from among them, put them in your hand. If you have Spell Mastery, pick 2 creatures. The sideboard, 4 Cleric of the Forward Order, which is when it comes to play, gain 2 life for each creature named Cleric of the Forward Order in play. So when you rally, you get 4 Cleric of the Forward Orders. They each gain you 8 life. It's a blowout when you cast Rally of the Ancestors. Another Gem Protector, a Hidden Dragon Slayer, a Reclamation Sage, a Stratus Dancer, 2 Downfalls, 2 Kolaghan's Command making an appearance again, and 3 Thoughtseize. So Jace Viren's Prodigy, what do you have to say about that? Because I know you were interested.
Yeah, I think it's really good. I mean, it like was pre-ordered at like $10 or something, and I was saying on Friday, I was like thinking that this card was going to be up to $25 by the end of the weekend. And it was $17, but today it's $25.
I was going to say, it's got to be pretty expensive because Star City Games has it for $35.
Yeah,
so
must
I'm gonna
be
guess
higher on Star City. Yeah, so the rule with Jace's is no matter what it does, it's always going to be worth more than $10.
Correct.
And it was $10. So that's the buy-in price at that one for sure. Like, I would not hesitate to buy 4 of them. I picked up 1 of them. I didn't get the other 3 in time. I did get to run. I didn't go to Chicago last weekend, but I did go and I just played in Milwaukee. At GPT, and I was playing my Saltai Reanimator deck because that's all I had, and I just threw one of the Jaces in there because, you know, the looting is pretty great when I want to throw something in my yard to reanimate.
Absolutely.
Such as like my Dragonlord of Tarko, which I've gotten there, the one off, because I can't always cast him. There was actually a situation I didn't have the red mana on, though I had like 11 lands out, and so I could pitch him with the Jace and then reanimate him. But even better is when you reanimate the Jace, he's got haste, and then you discard, and then you can flip him into the Planeswalker.
So, I don't think that's great, though, because if you flip him, does he stay in play?
Yes.
Because, what? I didn't expect that to be the answer, because I don't think he becomes a new object. He's the same object that just turns over.
I think
he still gets exiled. Well, I want to check with the judge on that.
Okay. If he doesn't, what it allows you to do is his -3 is you can get an instant or sorcery back.
Yeah,
so if your yard is loaded up, then your whip becomes not just creatures, but also you can reanimate instant.
And so I was just about to ask the next question because I haven't stepped. I haven't looked at the actual rules for how these flip planeswalkers work.
Yeah,
and my next question was, when you flip it over, can you activate it as a planeswalker? Like, you did the thing that turned it over, and you can activate. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, because he's not tapped.
Woo! That's pretty good, actually.
Let's see.
So, yeah, Lou, flip this guy into Snapcaster, downfall your planeswalker? That's pretty good.
Yep.
Alright, I can get behind that. That's...
Alright, so I'm looking up early on this one. I think that he might make Saltai, like, you know, playable again. It's been a while since the deck's been good because of Jamoka's command, but there really isn't a lot of Jamokas going around with, like, at least in the Chicago results.
Yeah, not a lot of Jamoka's commands. I'm going to talk about the Rally Ancestors deck while you look this up.
Okay.
I was looking at this deck, and I like the Nantuko Husk addition, being able to give you a way to bin your creatures again instead of Rally, empty my graveyard, have to start over. Because that was always the problem when you tried to play the Rally deck in Standard, was that you had to empty your bin, and then you had nothing. Like, you couldn't put them back. And so I was trying to figure out, like, what's the math here that you could rally for to kill your opponent without using the combat step, and at as low a number as possible. And so if you play a bunch of elves in your rally deck, the answer is, like, rally for three and put, like, three of the drain elves, which means you have to get seven elves in your graveyard. And then, like, the other thought was you play Siege Rhino and Grey Merchant of Asphodel. And so if you do it for five, two Grey Merchants, a Siege Rhino, and a Husk deals 15 damage. So you would need to add another Siege Rhino to get the 20. Or if you ever just get three Grey Merchants, it's, and a Husk, it's 7 by 3 is 21. So, like, some combination of those creatures just kills them on the spot.
Yeah, so, that's what I've seen with the Gather. Isn't it just, like, a junk, like, great Gary and
that's how it was originally, but I think that Jace is too good not to play. And I like the red splash for Kolaghan's Command, because that's the only thing he splashed red for, was Kolaghan's Command out of the sideboard. But the, like, I could see playing, like, junk elves Gather the Pack, or Rally the Ancestors, because three of the Drain Elf and seven Elves is lethal. So if you, like, turn on the Jump Jets with just, like, mill your deck with Gather the Pack and Satyr Wayfinder and then rally for three, you get to keep the same rally number and kill them with the Elves. So that's a thought if you're going to try and play the rally deck.
Nice.
Yeah. Because then you can play both Rally and Collective Company.
Yeah, you totally could.
I don't know. This is
then,
just me.
Then you have then you've loaded up a lot of instants and sorceries, and you don't have much room for you know, removal spells and answer spells in there.
Yeah, I mean, you're committing to being a combo deck at that point, and so I don't know how good it is. It's just a thought that I kind of came up with as I was, like, looking this deck over earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. So something to chew on. I'm all done with the rally deck. If you have something about it you want to talk about, or if you just want to take over and I'll ride side seat for a while, I'm more than willing to let you go.
I don't know, man. I think it's an interesting creation, but I'm definitely not thinking that it's, like, I think it's a one and done. I mean, it's really like fickle to, like, really pointed sideboard answers. Like, I don't know. I think Aether Spouts would make you cry a little bit, wouldn't it?
Not really. Because Nantuko Husk can sacrifice itself. So if you attack with the Husk, so, like, you sack all your guys to the Husks, you attack with the Husks. And if they Aether Spouts, you just sack everything and put it back in the yard. That's why I was trying to figure out, is there a way to win? Like, the reason I was trying to figure out if there's a way to win without the combat step is because, like, Abzan just puts a bunch of, like, Siege Rhinos in play, and Intimidate doesn't do anything, so, like, alright, block with my Siege Rhino.
Yeah. I forgot about that. So you're right. I mean, but yard removal, is there anything that's efficient right now that we can, you know, that
I think Tormod's Crypt is a card. There's also like a 4 mana creature that has Constellation Exile their yard.
Oh, and Offenza.
Oh, and Offenza's, yeah, that's a creature, but But that card has sort of fallen out of favor because of the language, like we were talking about earlier. So, kind of like the give and take. If they want to play a graveyard hate card, they can play Anafenza. So, I mean, is Anafenza going to be played a lot? And if you're willing to gamble that people aren't sleeping up Anafenza the foremost, then there you go.
Yeah, so, all right, so we talked about a little bit about Jace. That was one that I predicted for this weekend to be a big rise in price. But the other one I was kind of thinking was Scap Clan, Berserker, which I had talked about in the chat a lot. You know that one, Daryl?
I have to look it up.
All right, I'll tell you. It's two red and a colorless. It's 3 mana for a 2/2 haste. And it's got Renowned. And when it's Renowned, whenever an opponent casts a non-creature spell, it deals 2 damage
to them. Oh, it's Tidal on the Grim Emblem when they... Okay.
Kind of. It's any non-creature spell they cast, and it's only opponent.
Oh, well, that's pretty good. All right.
So the cards are like $1.25, or it was,
so like,
when I bought a bunch of them.
So we're looking at, like, this guy, attack on turn 3. If they don't have a blocker, you get in, it's a 3/3.
Right.
And so
it's going to get at least 5 damage. If it connects, it does 5 damage then.
No, it does 4.
Well, it does... Or, yeah, two. 4. You're right. Sorry, 4. 2. And
so the question is, like... And this is, like, a strategical question with that card.
Uh-huh.
Once you make it a 3/3, are you just not attacking with it anymore?
No, sure. I mean, when the time is right, you are.
Okay, I was like, am I just, like, leaving this guy back? Because, like, Boon Stater kills my guy and... That seems real bad.
Well, but here's the thing. So a lot of people ask the same question. They say, okay, I mean, at 3, the opponent's going to have something bigger that can block, you know, in turn 3. Right. But the reason that this guy's good is because he's build around. So if you put him in a deck that's got, like, Searing Blood main and also, you know, other, like, Wild Slash main, you can quit out those blockers beforehand, and that's your plan. It's like, you got
to come with your creature. Oh, yeah, I'm not saying he's bad. I'm just, like, trying to figure out, like,
I'm not saying you're saying he's bad.
Is he good enough to not attack after he becomes Renowned?
Sure, he is. If you need to do that, then you just put him in the lock.
I was gonna say, is he that kind of guy that, like, all I want to do is hit with this guy, and once I do, he just sits there. And then, like, I just go about the game, or you try and kill it and take damage, and I don't care. All right, that's what I was kind of curious about.
So I did a couple matches. I posted them on our site.
I saw that.
And it's basically that deck is built around this guy. And then, so he pairs well with Monastery Swift Spirit too, because it's all about clearing the blockers and then getting in with your creatures. And so, like, Wild Slash. And then I've even gone up to, like, I think 4 Searing Blood main deck, because it's really good right now. Every deck's got a target for that, including the control decks now with the Hangerback Walkers.
Yep.
So, a main deck, Searing Blood, like, there's some matchups where you're just going to have dead cards main deck. Like, when you're playing Control and you've got plenty of the, like, really point, like, the Bioblights and stuff. And in some matchups, the Bioblight doesn't do much of anything. So, it's okay for you to, like, draw into some Searing Bloods in the first game if your backup plan is to just go aggro and those 4 slots or something.
Doing something else. Yep. Totally reasonable.
So, I don't know. I think that guy's got potential. I'm really surprised to see no red in the, like, no red deck wins in the top 8. And really not much beyond. I mean, where do they show up first? Let's see here. Looking in the top 8, looking in the top 16 now. White red aggro in 11th, but it's totally different. It's kind of more mid-range. There's a big red in 16th. But, yeah, like, I was thinking kind of like a Tarka or something, and there's just nothing that showed up.
Wow.
So you would think in the first weekend of a new set that would come out in droves, you know, and a lot of people are excited about, like, Abbott and all that. So, I don't know. It's surprising, for sure.
Interesting.
Speaking of which, Daryl, what do you think of Abbott? That's another one that, like, a lot of red players were really hyped up against.
Abbott of Carol Keith. Yeah. So...
You want to read it real quick, just so we...
Yeah, sure. I'm actually looking at a list with it. 2/1 for 2, 1 in a red, prowess.
Yeah.
Whenever it enters the battlefield, exile the top card of your library. Until end of turn, you can play that card. So, it's not a turn 2 play.
Right.
And it's basically, so, I don't know if you've heard Patrick Chapin talk about the theory of Muldrifters versus Baneslayers. You want all your creatures to be Muldrifters, which are to gain you some amount of value and do something other than their, you know, rather small frame, or Baneslayers that come into play and end the game. Like, this card, not if unkilled, ends the game. And so this guy definitely falls into the Moldrifter camp. And I'm not too high on him because, like, you want to play him on turn two, mm-hmm. which means you're just exiling the top card of your deck. And that's bad. So, okay, you play him on turn four. All right, so, or turn three, even. Sweet, we exile a card that we can cast. It's a one-mana spell. And then you're kind of missing out on the Prowess Tribute.
Right, right.
And so it's just like, I don't see a balance where Abbot of Carol Keep, it's like, it draws you an extra card. So it's just basically like 2-1 draw card. And but you have to have like 4 mana to really make use of the card. Because what if it's another Abbot of Carol Keep? Well, then you play it, and the next card goes to waste unless it's a land, because you don't want to draw infinite lands. So I'm not high on him, but I'm not excited as a control player to see my opponent cast Abbot of Carol Keep. It's right. just it's an annoying body with an annoying effect.
So, and I agree with you 100%. I've been going back and forth on this guy, but this is, like, over the aforementioned Scab Clan Berserker, like, this is the guy that's been getting most of the attention in a lot of the eyes of the red players, and I don't see it in that particular deck, but I think that there could be something for him, because, like, in a red deck shell, I think that the ideal turn to play him is gonna, like, obviously two. You want to play him on two, but you don't want to do it because of the ability, right? That seems like a nombo. Some cases you do want to just run out that 2/1 because you want to get in. But so, turn three is the next alternative, right? So ideally turn three would be fine because then you've got one mana untapped, or you can hope to draw a land and play a land for free, right? Right. But so, if you were to draw into a one drop, think about the options you have in red. Like, best case scenario, you're getting a Wild Slash. But if it's a Monastery Swift Sphere, you're going to be getting in there for one, no mana left to prowess. Or if it's a what's the
Zergo build?
Zergo, yeah. I mean, that's pretty lame too. Yeah.
So, like, if you're just like, all right, play Abbot of Carol Keep, even if I have a third land before I play my land, and assuming you have a third land, you have 19 plus 6-9 hits in this guy, or 10 hits in this guy's deck, so 29 hits. So it's a coin flip whether or not you're actually going to draw a card. Mm-hmm. And if you've already played your land, then you're down to 10 hits. So, like, it looks like Abbot of Carol Keep's key turn is turn 4, and I think that's too slow for a red deck.
Yeah, I'd agree with you, especially when you're just playing, when you're just gambling at that point, you know.
Yeah,
like this could be a Thunderbreak Regent on turn 4.
Yeah, like at turn 4, you could have Abbot of Carol Keep plus, like, Lightning Strike or Magma Jet or Searing Blood. Or you could have Thunderbreak Regent or Avarice Dragon or Chandra Pyromaster and get that effect every turn.
Right.
I'm not high on this guy. So for the times where you just, like, don't care about the exile, I just want a 2-1 prowess because I have a handful of burn spells, sure. It's great. But I would see most red players who are kind of inexperienced to mid-level red players trying to sandbag this and get the effect, when in all reality they just need a 2-1 for two.
Right.
So
yeah. So I know that John's got a totally different opinion on this guy, so we'll have to bring this up next week and see what his thing is about Abbot of Carol Keep, or if he's changed his opinion, because I know that he played. Did he play this?
I would assume so. I would assume so, and it looks like he probably didn't do well because he ended up in the Legacy 5K playing Burn. So,
yeah, that's true. Okay. Yeah, I think he said his record was not all that great, but he was pretty high on the card. So, I don't know. We'll have to look at it going forward, but my prediction is that this guy is not going to really see a whole lot of play in Standard right now, but I can see Scab Clan Berserker getting...
I'm certainly not high on Abbot of Carol Keep. I don't know how I feel about Scab Clan Berserker.
Nah, alright.
It makes me think of Bogard Ram Gang. That's the comparison I have.
Oh, that was a good card.
Yeah, and I'm not. That's what I'm saying. Bogard Ram Gang was a 3/3 haste for 3. I mean, granted, he's not a 3/3 haste when he comes out, but I mean, after you hit them, he's a 3/3 for 3.
Yep, with Wither.
Yeah, he's got Wither. Yeah, I mean, well, Bogard Ram Gang was a 3/3 with Wither. I'm talking about the other guy, Scab Clan.
Oh yeah, yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, Berserker.
Yeah,
you know, he's basically Bogard Ram Gang after you hit them. So I mean, I'm not opposed to Bogard Ram Gang. It's a good card. So that's sort of my baseline for this, for that card, is Bogard Ram Gang.
All right, I'm gonna do a 20-second tangent here. Ram Gang in a red devotion shell in Modern with Fanatic Amogus. What do you think?
It's terrifying. Because you could play that. I mean, you could play that guy or Boros Reckoner.
You could play the Ash Zealot on two. That's two red symbols. You could Boros Reckoner.
That Goblin seems, Guide and Ash Zealot, the Boros Reckoner into Fanatic Amogus, take seven. Yeah.
All right, well, here we go. Deck building challenge. Mono red devotion in Modern next week. See ya.
Oh God, I'm out. I don't know.
Blood Moon.
Got him, boys.
I mean, definitely want four on the side.
Yeah. So what do you got for me?
We covered a lot of the stuff that I was going to talk about, but I'm going to jump to this this juicy deck tech.
All right, we're gonna skip all the things. Yeah. And go straight to the deck. All right, let me open it, because I actually have a little juicy deck tech, and I'll let you start talking about it while I try and find it.
All right. Well, I'll say this: this is a Hooglin brew again. This is a modern one, though. This is not his hanger deck.
Shocking, Hooglin with another deck that we're gonna be high on.
Yeah, and you know he's a big proponent of the metery. I don't know. He's like somehow involved in that site. Maybe sponsored by. He's always wearing those shirts. So.
Yeah, he is sponsored by the
metery. He is. Okay. So he posted this on the metery. He was doing a lot of crash test videos with it. And I just kind of like caught wind of this. He calls it the Kiki Chord, and it basically is. It seems to be built around like a Kiki Pod, but goes full on to the Kiki and Resto Angel combo.
Yeah.
And it's I'll read down real quick because it's kind of an interesting list. So two Coursers, one Iron of Rhetoric.
Yeah, those are the first two cards I saw, and I already thought this deck was super ambitious. Go ahead, sorry.
Two Ewit, one Linvala, one Magus, four Resto, one Scavenging Ooze.
I'm going to stop you for those of you that don't know. It's Magus of the Moon.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Magus of the Moon. Of course, the only one
you play. There's a bunch of them, so just...
Yeah, one Spellskite main, four Wall of Omens, because you can blink and draw with Resto. Two Kiki, two Kitchen Thinks, four Birds, one Kasali, three Wall of Roots, two Domri, four Cord, and three Path.
And some lands.
And then some lands. Yep.
Gavity Wait, Township.
Notable lands.
Like, one Gavity Township is the only thing worth mentioning.
Yeah, Firelit Thicket. Two Firelit Thicket to get your Kiki mana.
So I think you have underestimated the power of Kiki Jiki and Wall of Omens and blocking. That's a good one.
But I mean, if you've got Kiki out, you're gonna win the game with the Resto. They're four of them in there.
Not necessarily. Like a lot of times, if you're just like in top deck mode, you just like can go Wall of Omens into Kiki Jiki and take the game over. Because I've played like the Kiki Twin deck with like all the Wall of Omens, like Blue Red Twin, mm-hmm. and like sometimes you would just win a game because you just had Wall of Omens into Kiki Jiki. You're just like, all right, make a Wall of Omens, draw a card.
Yeah.
Make a Wall of Omens, draw a card. All right, still haven't found a thing to kill you with yet.
Like, this one was June 24th. I think that he's got a more recent one because I've actually played a different list or a slightly different list.
Lord, we're up to episode 16 on Nike.
Are we? Okay. So I pulled up the wrong one here. He's got episode 16. So the changes are that the Eidolon of Rhetoric becomes like a Fulminator Mage, I think. And then there are no Kitchen Finks in the main deck.
There's also a Sin Collector.
Oh, yeah, he's got Sin. He splashes black for one Sin Collector in the main and then one in the board.
I mean, it also casts Fulminator Mage. Is there actually a black?
Well, there's red for the Fulminator Mage. That's it. It's just a Sin Collector. So I'm thinking you could even, since you've got the black, you could even go into the Orzhov Pontiff too if you needed.
Yeah.
But anyways, so the deck is like has insane card advantage for having not blue. Courser plus Domri plus I don't have a land or a creature on top of my deck, so I'm gonna play Wall of Omens and draw, and now I do. Or one of the like eight fetch lands helps you out too, you know.
Courser gets to fight things. That's actually pretty cute.
Courser gets to fight most things.
Of the,
that's right.
Because most of the things are X1s, and so your 2/4 with a big butt gets to fight their thing. Yeah, all right, I can get behind that.
And so with all the walls and like the cheap cheap creatures in there. Like, you can cord for a lot of the answers that are already main deck in here, like in the Eidolons or the Fulminator Mages or the one spell sky in the main deck, which is the most useful tool in there.
Alright, I can get behind this deck. This is kind of cool.
And let's see, what am I trying to say? Oh, the walls nullify a lot of the aggro strategies, which is what you need in something that's going to set up for a combo like that.
Yeah.
And what else here? Basically, the option to just go, like, straight up mid-range beats is there. I mean, Resto does that on its own, and running four main deck is just good.
Yeah, not to overlook the main board, the two main board Splinter Twin answers. So, I mean, you're in pretty good shape here, yeah. I think.
And so also, I really like in the board, and the current list has this two Ghostly Prison in the board, which is really good.
Yes, that card is criminally underplayed.
And the Stony Silence is insane, too. But I kind of disagree with him on those, because if you're going to play a deck that's built around toolboxing, like, your creatures, then I think you want to go into, like, a creature that you can hit. So I would go to, like,
you mean Kentucky War's Wage?
At least one of them. One Kentucky and two Stony
Silences. There is.
Is there?
Yeah. There's three Stony Silences and a Kentucky of War's Wage.
Oh, well, you're looking at episode 16, then, because I'm...
I am, yeah.
Okay.
In episode 16, he has a Kentucky of War's Wage.
Okay, so he not only just gets rid of a Stony Silence, but he actually adds the Kentucky. I wonder what the...
Wait, how many Stony Silences did he have on episode 15?
He's got three here, and so I thought he replaced one.
He's still got three.
So he's still got three, yeah.
And a Kentucky. Yeah. He does not like the affinity.
I can imagine, though. I mean, that seems to be, like, the tough matchup. But he's got pretty good answers to... I mean, I guess he's got decent answers to Tron and, like, Fulminator Mage. But that's about it. Linvala. Maybe Linvala's not even a good answer to Tron. He's got the Magus of the Moon.
No, he doesn't have Magus of the Moon in this deck. Linvala is actually the answer to Splinter Twin.
Okay. Right, but I'm trying to think of what works against Tron, and I don't know. I guess I thought that it doesn't.
Stony Silence.
Yeah, Stony's... Okay, Stony does. That's
pretty much it. No, I'm kind of interested
Haven
to see
Mind
people...
Sensor.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested to see people take this pod-style deck down the road of four Collected Company and a large quantity of Mages of the Moon to make, like, upkeep Blood Moons and lock your opponent out of the game.
So you want to play Green Moon?
not necessarily Green Moon, but it's just so, like... A lot of people, if you're just playing like a Naya deck, won't fetch basics. And so you just like cast Collected Company on their upkeep. Which is actually usually something you do against control decks, for instance, to try and tap them out so they don't get to make proactive plays. And if they don't counter your Collected Company, and you put a Blood Moon into play while they have fetch lands on the board, they look like a knucklehead because they're like, yeah, whatever. And they don't get to crack their fresh lands. They just have mountains. All mountains.
Right.
So, and I think you will catch more people than not with that game one. And so I think something to consider in your Collected Company decks.
So, I mean, that's a totally different brew, but...
Yeah, absolutely.
I see where you're going with that.
They sort of diverge at that point.
So I should also add, Daryl, that this is the episode 16 version of it, the most recent iteration of this. He's got the one Ghost Quarter in the main, which seems weird to me because there's no way to like really dig it out except for just like the massive amount of cards it draws.
It's so ambitious to play a four color deck with a Ghost Quarter.
I know, but it's really a three color deck.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Blood Moon, this man, please.
Which is okay, because he's got the Wall of Roots for his green and the birds.
I know. It doesn't actually do anything.
anyways, so it's a cool deck. I mean, I'll let Jeff speak for himself. I'll put the link in the notes and stuff. But I've been playing it a lot. I actually put it together in paper, and I realized that almost everything in the deck has a promo version of it, which is pretty sweet. So you could go out. I've got the four promo...
Restos, the
Wall of Omens. The Restos I don't have. I need to get those. But the Scavenging Ooze, the
Spell Sky have a promo?
Doesn't yet, but I'm sure it will soon.
Wall of Omens, Birds of Paradise.
Actually, Kiki Vintage. Does too. Doesn't he? Sin Collector.
He doesn't have a promo, but he has like the From the Vault printing, which is like a promo.
Oh yeah, the From the Vault Legends. That's true. Okay.
So, I mean, yeah, you could pretty much promo out most of this deck. Yeah, that's kind of weird.
That's probably true of a lot of modern decks, but this one in particular, like, if you're running all those walls, like, the Wall of Roots even has a really sweet one. I don't know if you've seen
that. Oh, yeah, no, I have seen that. Yeah, it's, I like this deck.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to leave it at that for this week. I do have some really important non-Magic news, if you're ready to move on to that.
Yeah, dude, I'm magicked out. I've got all of my talking in today.
Okay, onward and upward. So this is, like, I want everyone to be aware that LeBron James has signed a partnership with, I think, Warner Brothers, of course. LeBron James posted on his Twitter the other day that he had just signed a deal with Warner Brothers, and he was excited to be making stories with them, or something along those lines. He said it really awkwardly. And so, of course, the internet exploded and was like, okay, Space Jam 2 is coming out. This is a sign, right? Because why else would LeBron James be working with Warner Brothers?
Oh, my God.
But the problem is,
LeBron James... Let it die.
So, I don't know. I think it would be a funny remake. Definitely not going to be a good movie, but worth seeing
on a couple of beers. Just let the Space Jam hysteria die, world, please.
How about you, Daryl? How's your week been?
Pretty good. I get to, like, sit at my desk and do a lot of nothing. Not really. I troubleshoot software, so now my life has gone from dealing with people that have no clue what they're talking about to dealing with people that know what they're talking about, which is great.
Nice.
So, yeah. The quality of the people I now work with has risen successfully.
Uh-huh.
And it actually makes my life a lot easier. Nothing really.
Yeah, shout out to your old employees.
Yeah, shout out to my old employees. Some of them were pretty bad.
Your old coworkers.
Cannot disclose here some of the bad stories. But all in all, had a great time. Having a great time in Baltimore. Nothing really super exciting, not Magic related, because my weekend is going to be spent going to play Magic. So I'm going to be going to Richmond to play the 5K there. So
nice. Cool. Good luck.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to play Legacy or Modern yet. I have three modern decks sitting on my table built, and I have a legacy deck. So I don't know which one of them I'm playing yet.
What are your choices? I'll help you make the decision.
So I have, in legacy, I have Miracles.
Yeah, don't play that one.
Oh, it's pretty good, man. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, what else?
And in modern, I have 5-Color Control,
mm-hmm.
Splinter Twin, Grixis Twin,
yeah.
And Blue-White Tron.
I say you play Splinter Twin.
Splinter Twin just that good?
Yeah, I think so. I don't, right. Daryl, I gotta be honest with you, I don't feel extremely strongly about 5-Color Control this coming weekend.
I don't either. I think you'd
have a lot of fun doing it. But
I'm thinking I might have to let that deck die.
Okay, I'm thinking it's an X and 4.
Yeah, I think I might have to let that deck die until they ban Tron?
I think that deck's got a lot of issues.
Bloom and Blood Moon. Yeah, so if they ban 8th and 9th edition, if they ban 8th and 9th edition and Gristlebrand,
yeah,
I might have a chance. 8th and 9th edition and Gristlebrand. That's what I need for that one. So yeah, it's either Blue-White Tron with 10 Tron lands, which is just... I don't know how I got to 10 Tron lands. Don't even ask.
Yeah.
So I might have been drunk when I built this, but there are only 3 Urza's Mines and 3 Urza's Power Plants.
Is it don't is it Gifts? Gifstron?
Yeah, it's Gifstron.
So that's why you need the Iona, huh?
I did need the Iona. I still have my LSV signed Elishnorn, but I needed the Iona, the Emrakul, and the Ugin.
Oh, LSV signed your Elishnorn?
Yes, he did.
Did he sign your Phyrexian Language Elishnorn?
No, unfortunately, I am not that cool. I just have the original old school beatdowns Elish V. Sorry, guys.
That is like the coolest promo. This is so not Magic related.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my excitement is that I'm gonna get to go play Magic this weekend. Terribly, terribly nerdy. Thank you come again.
Yep. Well, that sounds awesome.
Go, I hope go watch Ant-Man though. I enjoyed Ant-Man.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Go watch Ant-Man. That's
did,
my...
Did you see the clip where every time Paul Rudd comes on Conan, he brings the same clip of Mac and Me as a joke? Like, so he'll be, like, on the show, and you know how he always says, okay, so here's a clip from my latest movie, Role Models, or whatever, then they'll roll a clip of Role Models, or what Conan thinks is the clip of Role Models, but it's really this clip from Mac and Me, where this kid's, like, rolling down a hill in a wheelchair, and he's, like, he launches off a cliff and, like, falls in the water, and this little, like, E.T.-looking alien thing, like, goes, oh, no! So he's done this for his last, like, 15 appearances on the show without fail, and Conan says... He always promises him that he's not bringing it. He's not going to show that clip. And so, like, in the most recent ones, he always, like, starts to show a clip from the actual movie he's in, and then it just cuts to the clip of the kid rolling down the hill. And so he did it for Ant-Man in a way that it played Ant-Man for a good, like, 30 seconds before Ant-Man was, like, on this field where this kid is rolling down the hill, and he's like, hey, come over here. And the kid's like, he goes rolling after Ant-Man and goes launching into the water. And,
God.
And they have him, like, superimposed into the footage. It's pretty hilarious. You gotta check it out.
Perfect. Yeah. No, but I enjoyed it. So that's my non-magic. Go see Ant-Man.
Alright, definitely will.
That's the homework. Go see Ant-Man.
Alright. Well, actually, I've got a wedding on Saturday, so I'm getting married.
Congratulations, man.
Thanks, man. It's been a long time coming. A 2-year engagement, so we're getting...
I'm glad you didn't want your soul anymore. You could have at least given it to, you know... Of all the people you could have sold it to, you gave it to a woman.
I will donate it to science.
Science doesn't study science.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I will donate it to religion. All right, perfect. Dude. Well, I think we're going to wrap it up.
I'm done here.
All right, cool.
Send it home.
Twitter. @card_knock_live.
Of course.
Brandy there's wants your bad beat right? stories at his PayPal, and there's a website, which is what, Daryl, you got that one? You know the website?
Oh no, it's cardknocklifepodcast.com.
Yeah, there you go. Good job.
Nice. Yeah. It's been a while since I've actually looked at it. I listened to the podcast on MTGcast instead of going to the website.
Well, you can do that there too. Thanks to MTGcast for hosting.
Yeah.
All right. Anyways, that's it. Let's blaze it. Good night.